Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Chapter 4, Gajendra Returns to the Spiritual World, Text 13. Evam vimoksha gajayutapam abjanavas. Tenapi parsha dagatim tamitena yuktaha. Gandharva siddha vibhudera upagiyamana. Karmad bhutam swabhavanam guru dasano gai. Evam, thus, vimoksha, delivering, gaja yutapam, the king of the elephants, Gajendra, abjanabha, the supreme personality of Godhead, from whose navel sprouts a lotus flower, Tena, by him, Gajendra, Api, also, Parshadagatim, the position of the Lord's associate, Gamitena, who had already gotten, Yukta, accompanied, Gandharva, by the denizens of Gandharva Loka, Siddha, the denizens of Siddha Loka, Vibhudai, and by all great learned sages, Upagiyamana, were being glorified, Karma, whose transcendental activities, Adbhutam, all wonderful, Svabhavanam, to his own abode, Garuda Asana, sitting on the back of Garuda, Agat, return. Translation of Prabhupada by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Upon delivering the king of the elephants from the clutches of the crocodile and from material existence, which resembles a crocodile, the Lord awarded him the status of Srup Mukti in the presence of the Gandharvas, the Siddhas, and the other demigods who were praising the Lord for his wonderful transcendental activities. The Lord, sitting on the back of his carrier Garuda, returned to his all-wonderful abode and took Gajendra with him. Purport. In this verse, the word moksha is significant. For a devotee, moksha or mukti, salvation, means getting the position of the Lord's associate. The impersonalists are satisfied to get the liberation of merging in the Brahman effulgence. But for a devotee, mukti, liberation, means not to merge in the effulgence of the Lord, but to be directly promoted to the Vaikuntha planets and to become an associate of the Lord. In this regard, there is a relevant verse in Srimad Bhagavatam 10.14.8. Tate nukam pam susamikshamano punjana evatmakritam vipakam vidvag vavubir vidadan namaste jivete yo muktipade sadayabhak. One who seeks your compassion and thus tolerates all kinds of adverse conditions due to the karma of his past deeds, who engages always in your devotional service with his mind, words, and body, and who always offers obeisances unto you, is certainly a bona fide candidate for liberation. The devotee who tolerates everything in this material world and patiently executes his devotional service can become mukti pade sadayabhak, a bona fide candidate for liberation. The word dayabhak refers to a hereditary right to the Lord's mercy. A devotee must simply engage in devotional service not caring about material situations, then he automatically becomes a rightful candidate for promotion to Vaikuntha. The devotee who renders unalloyed service to the Lord gets the right to be promoted to Vaikuntha Loka, just as the son inherits the property of his father. When a devotee gets liberation, he becomes free from material contamination and engages as a servant of the Lord. This is explained in Srimad Bhagavatam 10.2.10.6. Mukti hitvanyata rupam srupena vavyastiti. The word swarup refers to srup mukti, going back home, back to Godhead, and remaining the Lord's eternal associate, having regained a spiritual body exactly like that of the Lord, with four hands, holding the Sankhya, Chakra, Gada, and Padma. The difference between the mukti of the impersonalist and that of the devotee is that the devotee is immediately appointed an eternal servant to the Lord, whereas the impersonalist, although merging in the effulgence of the Brahma-jyoti, is still insecure and therefore generally falls again to this material world. Aruya krichena param padam tada patanyana nadrita yushvat angrayaha. Although the impersonalist rises to the Brahman effulgence and enters into that effulgence, he has no engagement in the service of the Lord, therefore he is again attracted to materialistic philanthropic activities. Thus he comes down to open hospitals and educational institutions, feed the poor men, and perform similar materialistic activities, which the impersonalist thinks are more precious than serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Anadrita yushmat angrayaha. The impersonalists do not think that the service of the Lord is more valuable than serving the poor man or starting a school or hospital. Although they say Brahma Satyam Jagat Mithya, Brahman is real and the material world is false, they are nonetheless very eager to serve the false material world, neglect the service of the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We'll start with this verse and then we'll go into some other verses. Upon delivering the king of the crocodiles from the clutches, king of the elephants from the clutches of the crocodile, and from the material existence which resembles a crocodile, the Lord awarded him the status of Srup Mukti. In the presence of the Gandharvas, the Siddhas, the other demigods who were praising the Lord for his wonderful transcendental activities, the Lord, sitting on the back of his carrier Garuda, returned to his all-wonderful abode and took Gajendra with him. Here mentioned again that famous verse, Tate Nukampam Susamikshamano Bunjana Eva Makritam Vipakam Ridvak Vapudir Vividanmaste Jiveti Yo Bhukti Pude Sadaiva. Tolerance. That's the important aspect of learning or becoming liberated from material existence, is to tolerate the material existence and not become caught up in desiring one way or another, either for happiness or to avoid distress. The whole Vedic culture is meant to teach one tolerance. And tolerance is best learned by doing one's duty, finding out what Krishna wants us to do, and doing it in spite of whatever inconvenience there may be. From the beginning of Brahmachari life, Brahmachari, Guru Kule Vasandanta Guru Arhitam. One learns tolerance and duty, dutifulness. If one can do his duty, one recognizes that duty, of course, is coming from Krishna. People, generally, their duty means to make money and enjoy the senses, but they're missing the Dharma aspect of it. Without Dharma, the duty is simply animalistic life. But with Dharma, and Dharma begins with Varna and Ashram, and ultimately the perfection of following one's dharma is sarva dharma prichaja mamekam sharanam raja. Give up all other dharmas and surrender to Krishna. And if one surrenders to Krishna, then one can actually come to the stage, as explains in the Bhagavad Gita, that naiva kinchit karomiti yuktamanyate tatvavit pashan srimvan srishan jigran ashnanga chan swapan swasan palapan vishvijan grinan mishani mishanapi indriyarandiyarte shu vartanta iti dharyat. That a person in the divine consciousness, while engaged in seeing and hearing and smelling and breathing, while opening and closing his eyes, he knows that he actually does nothing, because, well, actually evacuating, receiving, opening and closing his eyes, he knows that only the material senses are engaged with their objects and that he's aloof from them. If one transfers his attention completely to Krishna, then just like when you have a coconut, when the coconut becomes ripe, then the inside of the coconut falls out and you can shake the coconut and hear it. But when the coconut's not ripe, you can shake the coconut but you don't hear anything. So when the soul falls out of material existence into spiritual existence by becoming fully conscious of Krishna internally and externally, and therefore not becoming dragged away by the delusion of Maya, then he knows he's not actually doing anything at all. So if we want to find out if we're in Maya or not, we just have to ask ourselves, do I actually believe that I'm the doer? Do I still have a false ego? And if yes, then we know we're still conditioned by the material nature. But that's all right. Still, we should understand that there's a process of becoming free from the material nature. And as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Deno sminita dehe, he tells Arjuna that we're not this body, which should be cause of great happiness for us. Because maybe we're a little disappointed because we like our body so much that if I had to be something, I wouldn't mind being my material body, this particular body. But if we can give that up, that attachment to this material body, as we've had so many material bodies. Now, Krishna tells Arjuna, you're not your body. So Arjuna said, that's all right, I can understand. It's pretty easy to understand that I'm not this body. But still, I don't like to kill my relatives because I have some attachment to them on some platform or another. So Krishna says, that's all right, Arjuna. You may have to kill your relatives and you won't feel so good about it. But matras parshas tukondaya shitoshna sukadukada agama payano nityas tamtitiksha sudarparata. Still, you have to tolerate. That's the nature of the material world. There's happiness and distress are coming and going like seasonal changes. So one has to learn how to tolerate these things and not be disturbed. If we're not disturbed, then we can fix our mind on Krishna. And if we fix our mind upon Krishna, then we won't be disturbed. Yam hinabhyantante te purusham purusharshava samaduka sukham dhiram samritat vayakalpate. O best among men, Arjuna, the person who is not disturbed by happiness and stress and is steady in both, he's certainly eligible for liberation. We're trying so hard to get free from our material problems. We're making so many plans to do that. But the actual real plan, the only plan that will actually really get us free from our material problems is to surrender to Krishna and tolerate the ups and downs of material existence. The more we surrender to Krishna, then the more we become conscious of Krishna, then the more we exist on the spiritual platform, then the more this material world becomes part of the spiritual world too, for us. Therefore, at the end of Bhagavad Gita, when Arjuna is asking about, again, how do we know who's self-realized and what is the process of doing it, Krishna repeats the same thing again. I forgot the first word now. Yoga of the Supreme Person. No, it's actually the three modes of nature. prakasham cha pravittim cha moham eva cha pandava nidvesti sampratitani nirvitani kangshiti udasinadvarasino gunayo yo vichalyate gunavartanti ityevam yo vitishtate nengate samadukasukam swasta samulavstrasmukangshana tuya priya priyo dhiram tuya nidatmasamsuti manapamaniyo dhiras tuya nidatmasamsuti manapramaniyo dhiras Gunati taksa uchite. Sarvaramba prityagi. Gunati taksa uchite. That a Supreme Personality of God had said, oh, Prith, son of Pandu, one who does not hate illumination, attachment, and delusion when they're present, nor longs for them when they're absent, remains undisturbed, knowing that the three modes of material nature alone are active. Being neutral and transcendental, knowing the modes alone are active. Who's situated in the self, who sees alike a pebble, stones, and a piece of gold. With an equal eye, who's equal to his desirable and undesirable, who's steady, equally well in praise and blame, to honor and dishonor, who treats alike both friend and enemy, and who has renounced all material activities, such a person is said to have transcended the modes of nature. Tolerance. Tolerate when we get praise, tolerating when we get defamation. Of course, it's not that we work in such a way as that we do get defamation. We say, well, who cares? And we are, you know, no, we should act for Krishna, and therefore, and whether we get praise or blame, that we become aloof from, knowing well that the modes of nature alone are active. And therefore in our Srimad Bhagavatam, great personalities like Maharaj Yashavdev, although he's an empowered incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, still he showed us how to become an avaduta and tolerate so-called praise and blame. Tolerate doesn't mean we simply grit our teeth and we don't scream. No, tolerate means that we go on with our service and we're not affected. So toleration can not be done artificially. It's only, we can tolerate factually only according to the extent that we actually fix our minds upon Krishna. Without fixing our mind upon Krishna, then tolerance is still on the material platform. And what we're tolerating today, eventually you'll catch up with us and we'll start screaming because we won't be able to tolerate anymore. Therefore, as we try to do our duty undisturbed by the reactions of the modes of nature, at the same time, we have to develop a genuine sense of Krishna consciousness, the fact that we're doing that duty for Krishna. Otherwise, it remains on the material platform. And therefore, at the end of this verse, of the purport, Prabhupada talks about the impersonalists, who also become expert at doing their, quote, duty, and they merge in Brahman, but they have no sense of doing that for Krishna. They have no sense of doing anything for Krishna. It's all for themselves. And therefore they can't appreciate the varieties of activities in this world or in the spiritual world. They're simply trying to avoid all kinds of activities. And therefore they may merge in Brahman, which is inconceivable happiness we can't even imagine to ourselves now. As I said before, the happiness on this planet, the maximum happiness, wherever that might be nowadays, I don't know. But if it was multiplied 100 times, it would equal to the happiness of the Gandharvas. And the happiness of the Gandharvas, if multiplied 100 times, would equal to the happiness of the sub-demigods, like the Charanas. And if that happiness was multiplied 100 times, it equal to the happiness of the actual demigods. And if that happiness was multiplied 100 times, it would equal to the happiness of Indra. And if that was multiplied 100 times, the happiness on Mahaloka. 100 times that is the happiness on Siddhaloka, and 100 times that is the happiness on Brahmaloka, and 100 times that is the happiness in Brahmat. So it's not some small happiness compared to what we're experiencing now. But if the happiness of Brahman were multiplied 100 trillion times, according to Prahlad Maharaj, it would equal to one drop, one atomic fraction of a drop of water in the ocean of spiritual devotional service. So that's something to meditate on. But of course, Prayas and Shreyas, generally speaking, people are caught up in Prayas. Whatever, as soon as there's something happening to them, then immediately they want to counteract it somehow or another. Of course, we have our limitations of tolerance too. If we have a nail in our foot, it's good to get someone to take it out. Now we think, oh, it's all right. Of course, Prabhupada was so advanced that when he was in New York in 26 Second Avenue, Jadarani Devi Das, he was painting upstairs in his apartment, and Prabhupada walked into the apartment, and there was a thumbtack on the floor, and Prabhupada stepped on it. Generally, most of us, if we stepped on a thumbtack, we'd be screaming in pain, dialing 911 for the emergency services. But Prabhupada just lifted up his foot, took out the thumbtack, looked at it, and put it down, and went on with his business. So sometimes Prabhupada displayed the tolerance. As a matter of fact, at the end of his appearance here, then he was literally only bones, skin and bones, and yet he was tolerant. The doctor said normally a person in this condition would be screaming out of agony. But Prabhupada was completely tolerant. He didn't take drugs, painkillers. He simply meditated on Krishna. Now, we're not on that platform, at least I'm not. Therefore, as we're practicing tolerance, for instance, we have Ekadasi where we fast, reduce our food. Following his appearance day, we have to fast for half a day. Janmashtami, the whole day. So these are opportunities to practice tolerance. And at the same time, fix our mind upon Krishna. These days of fasting are not meant to just torture us. They're meant to give us an opportunity to tolerate and at the same time become Krishna conscious so that at the final testing moment and our disappearance day, then we can both tolerate the problems of material existence that arise from our disturbed material bodily functions and at the same time be focused on Krishna consciousness so we can solve the problems once and for all. Everything is meant for that final test. If we pass the final test, then we're successful. And if we don't, then we still have to come back for a retest until we finally pass the final test. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions?
Hare Krishna. Thank you. Srila Prabhupada writes here about feeding poor people and starting schools and hospitals on one hand, and so therefore we have some devotees that take a very bleak view upon the Food for Life programs that we have. But on the other hand, Srila Prabhupada himself started also the Food for Life and also similar programs he was running. So what is the proper view on such charitable programs that devotees may run?
Depends. Prabhupada started Food for Life in India for a certain purpose. That is to give people an opportunity to appreciate our movement and chant Hare Krishna. So he also gave directions that along with the food distribution, people should know it's prasadam, and they should also be, there should be a kirtan, there should be chanting along with it. It shouldn't be for some mundane welfare work. Food for me and my wife. Food for life. Crumbs for the bums. That's just mundane. and the recipient doesn't get any real value, and the person who's giving it to it actually becomes degraded by forgetting Krishna. So Prabhupada didn't want to have a massive food distribution just to enhance our mundane reputation, because that's what happened to the organizations like the what was the name of it? Salvation Army. The original Salvation Army, they went out and chanted the names of God on the street. But then they were being criticized and they didn't get so much support, so they decided to switch over to mundane welfare work. And they forgot about the chanting after some time of God's glories. And now all that, that's all they are now, is a mundane welfare work, distributing, you know, what's the name of the chicken? What's the name of chicken in Hindi? Morki. So, not only they're not chanting the names of God, but they're doing sinful activities by giving people, you know, by engaging them in sinful activity. So we shouldn't do that. We should stick to our principle that we're trying to, food distribution, prasadam distribution, is meant for everyone, the rich and the poor. Prabhupada said everyone is poor. It shouldn't be aimed at enhancing our mundane reputation that we're feeding the poor. It should be made to help people take up the path of devotional service. Otherwise, it's a waste of time. It could even be, can mislead our, misdirect our movement and its purposes. Anything else? Yes.
Regarding tolerance, I think there is this serenity prayer, which ends, give me the strength, here it goes, that give me the strength to tolerate it, what I cannot change, to change what I can change, or, and the discrimination to know the difference. So, how do we know what we need to tolerate, and how do we know what do we need to actually fight?
Take some intelligence. Therefore, we have to have a humble, prayerful attitude and be receptive to Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra and the Super Soul within our heart. So humbly we investigate, we pray. When Krishna makes it clear, then we know. And if Krishna doesn't make it clear, then we go on humbly investigating and praying until Krishna makes it clear. Anything? Avadhuta Roy, did he ask a question?
Oh. Thank you for inspiring lecture. Could I please ask if we are disturbed in our minds, is it okay if we try to subdue that agitation and not show it from outside? Is it okay, and will it diminish after some time?
Probably not. It's like when you sweep during the year, you clean your room and you keep on sweeping the dust underneath the rug. The dust doesn't go away, you just don't notice it. Until spring comes and you lift up the rug and you get a lot of dust. Therefore, it's not, and Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Itendriyani, actually I always forget the first word for that too, that one who restrains his senses and organs of action, but his mind dwells on sense objects, certainly deludes himself and is called a pretender. Yastrindriyani manasa, niyamyavravitejana, karmanija karma yoga, that's the better one. Karmendriyani samyamya yaste manasasmaran indriyartam vimudatma mityatra asuchite. One who restrains his senses and organs of action, but his mind dwells in sense objects, certainly deludes himself and is called a pretender. On the other hand, one who engages his active organs and works with devotion by the mind without attachment, he is by far superior. So we should know when to properly express our feelings, and we should also know what's causing our unwanted feelings so we don't produce them in the first place. But in any case, whatever the feelings are, we just don't tolerate. We become Krishna conscious. If there's anger, then we think of Lord Nrisimhadev. If we're not in a position of Arjuna to fight against the demons like Arjuna did or Hanuman, then we think of Lord Nrisimhadev. But somehow or another, we have to fix our mind upon Krishna, and Krishna can purify us. Then these disturbances won't be there. But without Krishna purifying us, then it may be just repression, which will come back some other time. Is it Indriyani? Yes, Indriyani. Krishna's advice in the, is that the fourth chapter? Almost through the same chapter. Indriyasya Nriyasyarate, Ragadvesho Vivyasito, Turinavasham Agachet, Toyasya Paripantana. Oh, actually, before that. Sadrisham Chaitase Swasya, Prakritir Gyanavanapi, Prakritiyam Bhutani, Nigraha Kim Karishati. Even a man of knowledge acts according to his own nature, for everyone follows the nature he has acquired from the three modes. What can repression accomplish? There are principles to regulate attachment and aversion pertaining to the senses and their objects. One should not come under the control of such attachment and aversion because they are stumbling blocks in the path of self-realization. And Krishna concludes this whole thing by saying, if you want to avoid the whole thing, just fix your mind upon me. Control the lower self by the higher, and this by spiritual strength. Conquer this insatiable enemy known as lust. Become Krishna conscious. Anything else? Do you have another question? Oh.
Avaduta Roy Prabhu have some question. First, and this is from one of the Bhagavatam purports. Other processes than bhakti, along with their results, are materially contaminated. Question. How the liberation of Jnani in Brahmajyoti is materially contaminated? They are also said to be in Rasa, namely Shanta Rasa.
No, they're not Shanta Rasa. Shanta Rasa is beyond Brahman. They're Aruya Krishna Parampadam Tada. That, what is that? Yushma, what is the first word for that? No. What's the first word of the verse? What's that? Yanye Ravindaksha Vimuktamani Nastva Dasta Bhavada Vashuddha Buddhaya. Their intelligence is still contaminated. They're not in rasa with Krishna. They know who they're not. They know that they're not their body, but they don't know who they actually are. There's a difference between knowing who you're not and knowing who you are. If I told you we're in Frankenstein, and you agreed with me, then you would at least know you were in Frankenstein. But that doesn't mean you know who you actually are. So emerging Brahman gives you the realization of who you're not, but you still don't know who you are. When you find out who you are, that's the beginning of rasa. Okay?
And then is another question. Vishwanath Chakravarti in Srimad Bhagavatam 11.17.38 writes, one should not be without ashrama unless one is my devotee. If one is a devotee, then one does not have to follow the rules of ashrama. If the devotee enters ashramas in a different order or has no ashrama, there is no fault. Question. Could comment on this, please?
Comment on what? That if you're a devotee, you're transcended the ashram. The ashrams, because the ashrams are meant to bring us to Krishna consciousness. But that doesn't mean you don't act according to your ashram, unless you display the pastimes of an avaduta. Just like Maharaj, as I pointed out, Maharaj Rishabdev. Other than that, Krishna says, that whatever great man does come and men follow in his footsteps. So, Kamendriya, that even kings like Janaka and others, they attain liberation by following their prescribed duties. Therefore, just for the sake of setting the path for others, you should perform your duty. So Krishna doesn't recommend, even if you're liberated, that a liberated person has no duty to perform, etc., etc. But still, sometimes he acts just to set the example for others. And when he doesn't, sometimes he acts as an avaduta, like the python man that Prahlad Maharaj found, or Maharaj Rishabhdev, because that's also an example for others, how to remain completely aloof from the bodily concept of life. And sometimes we have Mamu Thakur, he was a great liberated devotee of Krishna, but he acted just as if he was a low-class person. He didn't act it, but he humbly took the position as if he was low-class. So there's a variety of possibilities. But generally speaking, if one is self-realized, it depends. He may do his duty anyhow to set the example for others. He may act as an avaduta, or he may remain in a very humble position and at the same time be fully self-realized. Yes? Okay.
So the question is, what is the result of karma yoga, and is karma yoga the same as buddhi yoga and bhakti yoga? Last sequence purport Bhagavad Gita 2:51, service for the cause of the Lord is called karma yoga or buddhi yoga, or in plain words, devotional service to the Lord.
Yeah, if you do karma yoga in Krishna consciousness, then it's buddhi yoga. So karma yoga is sometimes interchangeable, but generally, karma yoga is part of buddhi yoga. As Prabhupada explains throughout the Bhagavad Gita, that karma yoga is a state. For instance, in the end of the 5th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that karma yoga is a state leading to jnana yoga, where one understands, and the jnana yoga is a stage which leads to bhakti yoga. So that's explained at the 5th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. This 5th chapter is the practical explanation of Krishna consciousness, generally known as karma yoga. The question of mental speculation as to how karma yoga can give liberation is answered herewith. The work in Krishna consciousness is to work with a complete knowledge of the Lord as the predominator. Such work is not different from transcendental knowledge. Direct Krishna consciousness is bhakti yoga, and jnana yoga is a path leading to bhakti yoga. Krishna consciousness means to work in full knowledge of one's relationship with the Supreme Absolute. The perfection of this consciousness is full knowledge of Krishna, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So they're all parts of bhakti yoga. If you do bhakti yoga, you'll also be doing jnana yoga and karma yoga. But karma yoga and jnana yoga are incomplete yogas without bhakti yoga. Or as Prabhupada writes, in the 6th chapter, or in the 10th chapter, when one knows that the goal is Krishna, but one is attached to the results of his activities, then he's said to be acting in karma yoga. And when he knows that the goal is Krishna, but he takes pleasure from mental speculation to try to understand Krishna, he's said to be acting in jnana yoga. And when he seeks Krishna completely in Krishna consciousness, then he's said to be acting in buddhi yoga or bhakti yoga, the complete yoga. Or in the 6th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, in the purport, the last verse, Prabhupada says that karma yoga is the beginning of devotional service and has some knowledge and some renunciation. And when that increases, you come to the platform of jnana yoga. And when that knowledge and renunciation increases, you come to astanga yoga. And then when you complete the complete knowledge and complete renunciation, that's bhakti yoga. Okay. Khwala Granthiraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.